Accession number 8192, rule number 4.
Brigadier Barclay, rule 4. You were describing your move up through the elements of the Maginot Line.
We went. I remember we billeted the night before we went up. We took over from billets which had been occupied by Moorish troops, which had come over from North Africa, and I've never seen such a pickle or such a mess in all my born days. Anyway, then we moved up to the Ligne de Resistance, which is the third and the rear line of the Maginot defence organisation, through the centre line, which is the Ligne de Recueil, and up to the front line, which is the Ligne de Contact. And there we were, all the Ligne de Resistance was the Maginot line itself, and the other two lines went forward of it. And there we were in contact with the German forward element for a week. And from there, we, having strengthened our defences to the maximum requirement, patrolled at night. The French never patrolled. They never went outside their defensive positions. They were imbued with this attitude of on ne passe pas, and anybody who moved outside was vulnerable, which we find to our cost.
Now, you say that you improved your positions using explosives because the ground was so cold and hard. Who actually handled the explosives? Was that...
Well, we did. We used grenades, and I think that was all we had.
You didn't have any engineer support, though?
No, we didn't.
What sort of positions did you have there?
Well, we had trench positions. We had slit trenches there, which had held two or three chaps each, with a section grouped tight together.
So it'd be a sort of triangular position, would it? Sort of triangular in general shape?
Yes.
What was the terrain like?
Pretty woody. We were in positions in the forward edge of woods, also in the open, but I remember there was quite a lot of woodland about, and on our left, where the French were, it was almost entirely woodland. And they had very comprehensive range of positions, which had been prepared, dug positions, which had been prepared a long time, complete with squealing pigs.
Squealing pigs?
Yes. Yeah. They used to raid all the farms and help themselves.
How far were you from the German front line?
About 1,000 yards.
Could you see it from your position?
Yeah, we could see Germans occasionally. There was one situation which was rather favoured by the Germans. There was some railway carriages on an embankment which ran through no man's land, railway embankment. And the Germans just used this as an OP, and I could see them occasionally. Half a pair of field glasses, moving through these carriages. And I thought, well, that's a jolly good gunner target. So I ordered fire to be brought down by the French artillery at 75s, which was supporting us. And nothing happened to my indignation. And I got on to battalion headquarters to find out why I wasn't receiving the response to which I reckoned I was entitled. And they said, oh, it's not a legitimate target. The only legitimate target, you should know by now, is a working party in the open. That was the only target, such was the Ferney War, that we were entitled to shoot at. So they never shot at these Germans.
So they were left undisturbed in their open?
Yeah, left undisturbed.
You say it was wooded. What kind of woods were they?
Hardwoods. Hardwoods. Natural growth, not these sort of regimented things you see so much of on the continent.
Were they fairly close-packed?
Well, it was winter, and all the leaf was down, and no, they weren't close-packed. You could get quite a good view forward from 20, 30 yards inside.
What about undergrowth? Was there a lot of that?
No, there was enough canopy up above to keep that under control.
Now, you mentioned going on patrols. How were they organised? What sort of patrols were
they? Well, it is important for higher authority to know who was confronting us. And my commanding officer what do you mean? In fact, I think I suggested I should go out because it's jolly important to be offensive in this sort of situation. And also, one wants to know a bit what sort of set up there was the other side of the enormously elaborate barbed wire entanglements that the Germans had in front of their positions. And in any event, a prisoner was wanted for identification purposes. And so I went out on a patrol with one other officer and three chaps, or five of us, and we went a long way into the German position. We went, in fact, through the German positions, and it discovered a great deal of information. We didn't get a prisoner. There was a place which I thought held one, a house which they'd been using until a very short time before we got there. But after casing the joint, they'd obviously moved out to other positions. And as I came out of his house, I came out a very heavy fire, and we all did. And one way or another, we had quite a tricky time getting back home, but we made it all right.
What had happened? Had you been caught by a German patrol?
Well, we'd have had to fight it out.
No, I mean, why did you come under fire?
They spotted us. It was a moonlight night. And, of course, the clouds were there to help at one minute and gone the next. And just as I came out of this building, we were spotted. And a grenade landed between my legs. It was a light egg, Bakelite grenade, and it damaged my boots, but didn't damage me. And we then came under very heavy fire from all over the place, but luckily it was inaccurate. And we managed to make our way home. But with a great deal of information about what went on, not just in the front line, but about a mile back.
How were the German positions laid out?
Well, funnily enough, mostly they were breastworks too. Built-up breastworks, I suppose, because the ground was so hot. And that combined with a better field of fire. And they had the most lavish display of barbed wire entanglements in front of their positions. Luckily, we could see where to get through because there were tracks in the snow. But every now and again, we had to do a bit of cutting to get through.
But were the German positions similar to your own in their layout
more or less,
and design?
More or less. Yes, they're more or less. And about the same sort of size and about the same sort of arrangement of dispositions.
Did you discover who it was who was facing you?
No, we didn't at that stage. We didn't get the identification I'd hoped for.
Did you find out later?
Yes. I forget how, but it was... I can't remember, but it didn't happen while we were there.
Who were they?
I don't remember.
When you went on this patrol, the five of you, how long did it take you to actually get across no man's land and into the German rear area?
We were out most of the night. I suppose it took us about an hour and a half to get up to their positions. The first positions we came to were empty. We then went back up through positions. There were some positions that were occupied, but they were too closely knit to affect a degree of surprise. So we went right back, and we went back, in fact, to a place which is sort of quartermaster's distribution centre, and we found out where their dumps were. Information of that nature, which was valuable, and I mean, had we not been disturbed when we were doing a reconnaissance of this particular house, we'd have probably got what we were after in a Weber prisoner. But of course, once that had happened, and the balloon had gone up, and the surprise had gone, we hadn't got a hope.
Did any of you get wounded during this patrol?
No. We didn't. Stuff was flying absolutely all around us for quite a long time.
How did you get back then whilst under fire?
Well, we just came back. We hurried as reasonably as we could. We couldn't go too quick because, as I say, there was quite a lot of snow. But we kept together and we made our way back. The way we'd come, we'd cut one or two places in the wire, which facilitated our exit.
Did the Germans try to pursue you?
No, they just chased us with fire, as far as they could see us.
Did you do patrolling as a sort of regular routine activity?
Oh yes, I personally laid great store by it. It's quite a good training for one thing, and it's quite a good training for one thing, and it's very good for morale to feel that you're being offensive rather than sitting on your backside and letting them come, sort of thing. And always, I insisted, whatever stage of command I had, that patrolling was carried out.
And was 4 or 5 the normal size for patrol?
Well, no, it depended entirely what it was wanted for. If it was a stealth patrol required to get detailed information of some particular area, a two-man patrol made more sense. But if you had to have if you needed to capture a prisoner, you needed somewhere in the neighbourhood of 5. Anything more than that becomes somewhat unwieldy. But it plays a very important part. It curtails the enemy's chances of surprising you, for one thing, gives you forewarning of their activities. As I say, it has a very good psychological effect.
How far would a patrol normally go, a stealth patrol?
Anything up to 2 to 3 miles.
And how long would they take to?
Well, one said this sort of activity when the patrol's gone right in and laid up for a day and come back the next night. But generally speaking, 9 times out of 10, they'll do what they've got to do under cover of darkness.
So you didn't do patrols in daytime?
No. No, you couldn't get away with it.
Now, you said that they were good for morale and so on, and maintaining an offensive spirit. Did the men actually enjoy going on them?
Oh, yes, I think the excitement and the challenge was always a key feature. And there was great disappointment when they thought perhaps they might be going on one and they were left out.
Were there men that you particularly marked down as being good at patrolling?
Oh, yes. They had picked a little party on that day. Oh, yes, you've got to have chaps with fairly reasonable degree of intelligence and resourcefulness. You've got to pick a chap who goes on patrol fairly carefully.
So what sort of thing were you looking for, what sort of background and so on, when you picked a man to go on an important patrol?
Reliable, not flusterable, and intelligent, reasonably intelligent, in case he got cut off and had to get back on his own.
Do you know if the Germans were also active with patrolling?
I have reason to suppose that they patrolled in front of the French. In fact, I know they did because we found their track marks in the snow. But I don't think they did as far as we're concerned. We were out every night to some distance or another, and we never encountered them or saw signs in the snow of them having been near.
So you don't think they were?
I don't think so. I don't think they did. We had rather fun, actually. On one occasion, we were trying to elicit a bit of response, and we went down to a little tiny village, no man's there, and we rang the church bells. That created the most incredible consternation on the other side, among the French more than anybody else.
But it didn't draw the Germans out?
No. We thought that might draw somebody. We then hung around, waiting to see if somebody would come along. And we laid up an ambush, but no luck.
You mentioned the French. Did you see much of the French army while you were in the line?
We didn't actually. They had a motto, on a passe-par, which applied to basically the Maginot Line and the inhabitants of the Maginot Line, and all the French soldiers and a lot of the French population had little badges on with a fortress on the badge and the motto, on a passe-par, stamped across it. And this had an adverse effect, in fact, on the French army as a whole. They had a totally passive attitude towards the war, and they had an indoctrination of being ready to receive rather than going to the offensive. And they were firmly of the opinion that the Maginot Line couldn't be crossed anywhere, and as long as they sat on that and used enormous firepower that was capable of producing, they could keep the Germans on the other side. But they were dead against any form of patrolling, even in this position way in front of the Maginot Line, and they just sat in their trenches all through the night and waited for anything to happen that might happen. I think the Germans probably appreciated that they could approach the sector on our left, which was where the French army forces were, with impunity rather than our sector. But they were totally unoffensive-minded. This was a very sad state of affairs, in fact.
Did you actually have an opportunity to discuss the war with any French officers?
Oh, yes, I did at one stage, because during my patrol, the other officer with me got disassociated from the rest of our party. We came under heavy fire at one stage, and he was in a covering position on a railway embankment, and the enemy realised that we were around, and we came under a lot of machine gun and mortar fire with very light shooting up everywhere, and we had a rendezvous, a certain position on the German side of these barbed wire entanglements, where I said we'd stay for 10 minutes and no more for any members of the patrol who might have got disconnected with us. And we got to this place being fired upon heavily, and I say lit up in the process of our departure. But when we got there was no sign of this officer, and we waited for 10 minutes and he didn't appear. However, he got back on his own, but he came back. He didn't know the sector quite as well as I did, and he came back, in fact, not in front of our positions, but in front of the French positions. And he had a terrible time getting in. He shouted out who he was and everything, but they were fully prepared to sort of shoot at anything that moved on site and ask questions afterwards. So he did have a bit of a problem making it, but anyhow, he arrived in the morning, safe and sound, to my great relief.
What about the main fortifications? Did you ever manage to get inside any of those?
Yes. When we'd done our spell at the Ligne de Recueil, we then moved back to the second line, which is the Ligne de Resistance. No, as you were. I'm sorry, the front line was the Ligne de Contact, where we'd been. The middle line was the Ligne de Recueil, where we withdrew to our second phase of our experience, you might call it. And the third stage was a Ligne de Contact. Well, we did, I think it was 4 or 5 days in the Ligne de Recueil, and then we were pulled out altogether because, of course, the Maginot Line was manned entirely by French forces. But we did have a chance of going over this Maginot Line, and it was absolutely unbelievable. It was controlled like the hub of a battleship. There was an enormous office with press buttons and switches all over the place, down deep down in the bowels of one of these forts. And when a mortar, for instance, was called upon to fire, a button was pressed and a cupola on the top of a tower rose up, and this thing fired. And then, having fired, it was lowered down again. And all these guns and weapons that Maginot Line was equipped with had specific areas to fire onto. It was the territory in front of the Maginot Line including and beyond the ditches and the barbed wire entanglements, were checkered out in squares, and certain weapons were designed to bring fire to bear on particular squares. And so the commander of their particular area, their particular sector of the Maginot Line, lived in this control room, and according to what the OPs reported from observation posts dotted along the Maginot Line, he brought fire to bear on any particular sector that was required. But it was a most extraordinary, complicated and fascinating arrangement. There were little railway lines running all over the place, and the shells were the heavy shells weren't manhandled at all. They were run in on pulleys and fed into the breeches of the guns, and it was mechanized to the nth degree. It was extraordinary, really. And it went down tremendous depths, too, as far as the tunnels were concerned and the operation rooms were concerned. It was quite fascinating, but it had a very, very adverse effect on the mentality of the French forces as a whole, as I was saying.
What about the French forces actually in the line? Did you form an opinion of them, of their competence and their
affected enormously by they thought that the Maginot Line was impregnable, and they thought their firepower was such that as long as they sat pretty in their positions with good wire entanglements in front of them, the machine guns were so sighted and the power of the artillery was going to be so effective that they were able to keep them out. But, of course, they didn't really appreciate that without forward patrolling, they'd had little or no prior information of any movements forward of the enemy or plans for advancing on any particular sector of the front. We were never caught with our trousers down because we always knew if they were massing in any area and were likely to put in an attack in our sector. But the French would just sit there and wait and hope for the best with very misplaced optimism.
How long did you spend in the Maginot Line altogether?
Well, I think we were a week in the front line, the ligne de contact, and then I think it was something like 5 days in the ligne de recueil, and we didn't stop at all in the Maginot Line area. We went straight back after that. I think we were about a fortnight altogether in that area. But the weather was incredible. The weather was, it was one of the coldest winters for very many years, and in order for our positions, we had to use picks and, in fact, explosives, too, to prepare our trenches. And keeping the troops warm was a very difficult issue. As I've said before.
Where did you go then once you'd left the Maginot? Did you go back to your...
Well, then we went back to the area of Orchy, and we were in certainly divisional reserve. It may have been Corps. It was divisional reserve, I think. But anyhow, we didn't return to the positions we'd been preparing on the French-Belgian border. We were in reserve locality, which meant that we had more opportunity to train in other aspects of warfare. We spend quite a lot of time improving marksmanship with our weapons and practicing the firing of all the weapons we were equipped with. We spent a certain amount of time on embossing and moving in the dark without lights, which was a fairly complicated business. But the soldiers were marvellous. The drivers were really highly to be commended. I remember the first exercise we did, which took the whole night and was in pitch dark. We only had one minor casualty. Vehicles skidded off into a ditch. But they became very good at this. And I remember, too, there was the French produced a form of roadside lighting, which couldn't be seen from the air, and there were two little tiny lamps which just reflected onto the roads and helped us a lot in night driving. And we set our lights, I remember,
underneath the radiator of the car so that they couldn't be seen from up above, but they were on the front axle, just lighting up the road in front of the vehicle, but with a minimum chance of being spotted from up above. But that was one of the things we practiced in, because we all anticipated that the Germans would invade Belgium, and when this occurred, neutrality obviously went by the board, and we would go into Belgium to meet them. And to this end, we'd carried out an exercise along the line of the River Dyle at Wavre, where we would move him into position should this contingency occur. And obviously, we'd have to move up by bus, and we'd have to move up in the dark, and so a good deal of training went to that end. We also did tactical exercises without troops for the officers and the senior NCOs, and also we did battalion and brigade exercises. But the most important of all, really, is the subunit exercise. I mean, there's a well-known military adage that if a battalion has well-trained platoons in it, it's a good battalion. And if platoons are capable of good patrolling exercises and good techniques in the various aspects of warfare, by and large, you're likely to have a good battalion. So there was a major emphasis placed on the training of the section, particularly the platoon and the company, as well as the larger formation exercises. And that when we were in reserve, we were able to do, whereas when we were busy preparing these positions along the frontier, which is the Gort line, we were so involved in that, and so much had to be done quickly, that there was little time for any other form of exercise.
Where were you living while you were doing this?
Well, we were billeted in farmhouses. We had prepared positions to move into in the event of air attack. The soldiers were, by and large, billeted in barns, and the officers in the buildings immediately in the vicinity. We had reasonable degree of comfort. We had lots of straw for bedding, and the French population were extremely kind and helpful.
It's rather similar to when you've been in the front line.
Yes, that's right. But our reserve positions were prepared in outline.